Hi, I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seth Coe.
I'm Kevin Mackin.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Mackin.
Hi, it's Grant Hackett here.
Hi, I'm Sharon Spoon from the Wallaroos.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gashirin, and you're listening to Not the Footish.
Yep.
Yes, you are indeed listening to Not the Footy Show. This podcast, our 499th show.
Woohoo! Well done.
So, well, John, you've been a big part of it as well. Anyway, I'm Ashley Morrison.
I'm John Lee.
Good to be back, John, and it's very exciting to reach that milestone. It's been a long, long journey with a lot of guests, and I think we've covered over 70 sports in all that time. So,
some interesting sports in there as well.
There have been,
not
yeah.
Not just the standard ball types of sports.
No, exactly. And as you know, when we launched the show, the whole idea was to try and give some of those minority sports a little bit more airtime, but also to give women a bit more airtime as well, women's sport. And I'm pleased to say that our guest on this show is a woman who's breaking down barriers. We had her on the show just over 3 years ago, and that's Phoebe Schechter. And she is an American football coach. And I just thought, with the Super Bowl having just happened and Katie Sowers being the first assistant coach at the 49ers, we should catch up with Phoebe because she was involved with the Buffalo Bills. And just hear how women are breaking into the American football in America.
Just while you mentioned the Super Bowl, did you watch it at all?
I did watch a fair bit of it. I must admit, I wasn't there at the start.
Okay, no. Did you, the last 8 or 10 minutes, when the guy who, Mahomes, what I found really interesting was, in a sport that's so highly controlled by coaches, he took it upon himself to take, and took control of that game himself. He wasn't going off the sideline and consulting the coach, I'm sure they were screaming at him, but he was grabbing the ball, lining the team up, quick play, bang, bang. And in a sport that's so highly dominated by the coaches, it was so good to see a player just take the game on and just go, right, I'm just going to play. Just play.
Well, did you read the article? I published it on the Facebook page for Not Footy Show, from his high school coach. And it was saying, it's very interesting because it's that old chestnut, John. He didn't specialise at school, played everything.
Oh, yes.
And the
yes.
coach was saying that that's why he has that awareness, because he's played other sports that have actually given him that armoury rather than being focused on one sport. He's learnt that little things that from other sports that enabled him to have the game that he did at the end. And I completely agree with that.
And, I mean, the guy could have fallen apart. He's only very young. He got picked off a couple of times. Things didn't go entirely his way for a lot of that game. And just the composure. And it was so almost, it was anti-gridiron in a funny little way, the way he went about it. No, don't need you blokes. Got it covered. And off he went.
Well, we do touch on a bit of that when we catch up with Phoebe later in the show. But, yeah, it certainly was a great Super Bowl. I thought it was one of the most entertaining I'd seen for a while. But who's going to start us off today?
You go.
All right, then. I'm going to start, and I'm going to probably put myself in a really difficult position because, as you know, I get involved in a lot of the commentary of hockey. But I'm really, really sad, John, to see where the Pro League is at the moment. It's just the second year of what we were told was going to be the flagship competition for the FIH. It was going to feature the top teams in the world, 9 from the men's side of things and 9 from the women's side of things. And I just find it soul-destroying that you have rules and regulations and the media managers from half the countries or their social media people just do not understand the rules. And I also think that the people in the FIH have complicated things by having the shootouts now, because that's one of the big areas where there's confusion. Is so for those people that don't follow hockey, there's 3 points for a win. If you draw the game, it is 1 point each, and then they go to a shootout for a bonus point. It's not for a win, it's a bonus point for the person that wins the shootout or the team that wins the shootout.
And the shootout, for those who don't know, is essentially just penalty strokes. A different format of what penalty strokes used to be.
Yeah, so you've got 9 seconds to beat the keeper from the 23-metre line.
It's essentially the same thing.
Yeah, but what I find sad is obviously there's that misunderstanding now. I also think that having brought this in, it's added another level of confusion. Because as you've said, John, and I've seen some of your posts on social media, we're now rewarding, not necessarily mediocrity, but we're not encouraging teams to go for the win, which that was why the whole essence of the sport. People are now going, oh, it's 1-1, we'll hang on and we'll back ourselves in the shootout. And to me, that's not what the sport's about. The sport is about winning in the game time that is allocated for normal time.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And Spain's last season is a classic case in point. Oh, Spain, they won the shootout. Oh, they won this shootout. They won that shootout. Did they make the finals? No, they did not. Why did they not make the finals? Because they didn't win. And win means you get a W in the W column. You get a little one. And all you have to do is look in that column.
But also this year, you know, I was commentating last year. Obviously, I'm not this year because it's being done out of Sweden. And it breaks my heart to hear commentators who don't actually know the rules. And they're going, they've won in the shootout. And it's like, no, they haven't. Read the rules of the competition. And it just frustrates me because we were told this was 4 years in the making. Now, you would have thought that they would have covered off all this, gone to every single... I mean, the national associations have sent people to Switzerland for pre-Pro League meetings and to discuss all this stuff. So why are the media managers still getting it wrong? Because if the media manager gets it wrong, it then goes in the national papers. They get it wrong. It goes on news stations. They get it wrong. And the fans who know the rules are going, well, what's going on? And there's just confusion everywhere.
Well, when national associations are proclaiming victory, that gets you going up. Because, you know, it's not a victory. And I'm talking about the New Zealand men's team here. They had a draw and gained a bonus point from the shootout. That's what happened. There was no victory whatsoever.
But the other thing, John, that I think has compounded this is then we've got this new world ranking system, which, I'll be honest, I struggle to understand how the points are allocated because I'm not a mathematician, and you need to have a pretty good mathematical brain to understand what's going on because of the way it's set up. But you have a team like Australia and Belgium drew. Now, I think there was 2 points separating them on the world ranking. It was certainly around five, but I'm pretty sure it was only two. Belgium, though, because they drew with the team that was ranked above them, got more points and then went above Australia. Now, people were asking me, how can that be? The official result was a draw. So surely, when one and two are playing each other in the world, and there's only two world ranking points, they would share the world ranking points on that. If you're suddenly in a draw giving teams more points for a draw, again, it defeats the object because sport's about winning, surely. And therefore, your world ranking points should be based on wins.
And then they've got this funny situation with the lower down the table that team might be ranked, the more that points differential will be if you happen to draw or lose to them.
Correct.
Which means, you know, Australia's only ever going to want to play teams that are within one or two places of them. Because they're so high up the table.
Yeah, of course.
What's the incentive to playing 10th ranked team?
Yeah, and the problem is, even if they want to give young players a chance now, you're changing that. And that throws into another area where we saw, you know, when all the national associations signed up to the Pro League, it was agreed that they would not play any internationals against each other within the Pro League calendar. So what did we see? We saw Belgium bring an extended squad to Australia, and Australia A and Belgium A played, but there were about 6-7 players from their first team players that played in that game, or the two Pro League games played in that game, but because it was branded Australia A. So again, that's made a mockery of the Pro League, because suddenly, I take my hat off to Hockey Australia and Belgium Hockey because they saw a way around it. We'll brand it Australia A. We'll throw in some youngsters. It's not a full test match.
Yeah, I just don't want to hear any of either Belgium or Australia start whinging about the cost at the end of the season and how they've got no money left. I mean, flying all those extra blokes out here just to play a one-off Australia A test, dragging those blokes from all around the country to go to Sydney to play that one-off game. I mean, if these national associations then come out and whinge about how tight things are financially, well, have a look in your own backyard, folks.
Well, I can understand more why Belgium would have done it. If you look at it, because they were playing in Australia, then they went to New Zealand, and then they were playing in India. So you think, well, okay, just in case they had injuries, they were probably going to bring a much bigger squad than they would need. And also, let's be honest, all these teams, the big goal is the Olympics this year. So they're trying different combinations, and I don't think the results in the Pro League matter that much, as long as the coaches are seeing the development of their team, with a view to the Olympics later this year?
Yeah, it's been beset by troubles since the outset, the Pro League. From the very beginning, from the moment that they announced Pakistan was going to be in the Pro League for a start, you knew that there were going to be issues.
Now, well, that it goes
they're
back...
not entirely the FIH's issues either. They haven't helped themselves, but not everything has been the FIH's fault, inverted commas.
But, John, it goes back actually before that, because the Deloitte recommendation was it would be a seven-team league. 2016, it was agreed at the AGM in Riyadh that it would be a seven-team league. And then because India, they needed Star Sports to come on board, India came in, Star Sports wanted Pakistan, so suddenly they were going to expand it. So that, again, was the money. They were looking at the dollar signs, and it blew up in their face. But there's other issues as well, you know, like we saw, you know, the Netherlands playing against the USA because they'd had a bereavement when their team manager passed away. Suddenly the game was worth 6 points. Well, no, abandon that game, and that one just doesn't count, or split the points. You
That wasn't in the rules, though, actually.
But you can't have that. I just think it's ludicrous.
I think what's upsetting most people about that is the fact that that was the rule. They get the fact that it is the rule, and that's the way it works for this Pro League. But why is it? People are scratching their head. How did they come up with this formula? Why is it this way? It's patently unfair.
Well, I mean, the thing that I found amazing was obviously then everybody got up in arms when it happened to Great Britain and the game was abandoned in the women's game against the Hockey Roos.
When did Noah build the ark, my friend?
Yeah, but all of the national... What's upset me, John, is all of the national associations, and there are 12 of them involved in the FIH Pro League, so they all signed up. Not one of them has come out and actually said, no, we knew about that, we all signed off on it. Even the people that were on the competitions committee, none of them have had the guts to stand up and say, we made that recommendation, or we totally agreed with it, it came past us, it was rubber stamped and approved, and everybody knew about it. Not one person has accepted responsibility or even admitted that they were part of that process. Now, if you're going to make stands like that, to me, you need to stand up and explain yourselves.
Kate Richardson-Walsh, member of the Rules Committee, she did come out on Twitter and say she didn't like the rule very much. And then I asked her on Twitter if the rule had been run by the
Competitions Committee.
And I got an answer from it. I got a tick. So I can only assume that means, yes, it was discussed by the Competitions Committee.
But then if she doesn't like the rule, then that would tend to imply that she was voted down on it. So therefore, if she was voted down, why not say, yes, look, the rule was passed by the admit, first of all, because I read the piece with her on the BBC. Never in that article did it say she was on the competitions committee, which I think it should have done to be, you know, proper reporting. So then she should have said, I was on the competitions committee. She may well have said this, but the journalist may have cut it out. But should have said that, and then she should have said, if she did vote against it, I voted against it, but the majority ruled and it went through.
I'm not even sure she should say anything.
If I was in her position and I voted against something on a committee like that, and someone comes to me for an opinion, I'm going to say, I didn't vote for it, but I was outvoted by the majority.
See, I don't think she should do that. I think she should say it was passed by the committee at the meeting. And that's all she has to say.
Well, it should be minuted anyway.
Yeah.
So it would be in the minutes that she voted against it if she did.
I don't like the idea of someone from a committee talking outside of that committee.
No, I agree,
you're
never going to hear from the chairman of these committees because they're invisible people, most of them.
But,
okay.
No one said jack about it, basically.
Yeah, but seriously, John, then I agree with you there, but then why did the chairman, and this is what I'm saying, why did the chair of that committee not come out with a statement and say something?
Well, the FIH did. The FIH came out with a statement and said, nope, you all agreed to it, bad luck.
Yeah.
And it is bad luck. You should have stuck your hand up first. It's no good whinging after the fact.
But I mean, I just feel it's really damaged the integrity of the competition.
It's not a good look because people can't understand it. And people don't understand things, they turn off them.
Yeah, they walk away.
They do indeed.
And so, yeah, I find it sad. And now if you look at the situation with the coronavirus, China, where are they going to play their games?
Once again, something that's come up that isn't totally out of the FIH's control. Thunderstorm in Sydney, totally out of the control of the FIH. Playing a game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, totally in control of the FIH. That's silly. But you can't, you know, thunder and lightning can happen at any time. You can't blame them for those sorts of things. But it's the way they've responded to those challenges that have been thrown down. Now, exactly what they can do in, what else can they do in this Australia-China case at this stage? Probably nothing.
Yeah.
It's out of their hands, but it's how they respond to it that will be a key. Obviously, under their rules, they'll probably find some magnificent way to give everybody 9 points or something. who knows? But, you know, it's going to now damage the integrity of the competition because Australia's not going to be the only country that doesn't go there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing that I've got there, John, is it's 4 years in the making. Surely you look at worst case scenarios.
Well, which country's going to let the Chinese into play too?
There's another thing. Yeah,
goes both ways. So,
well, they're not going to be allowed in Australia at the moment.
No, not at all. Not going to be allowed into too many places at all.
No, and then you've got, of course, the imbalance then when it comes to world ranking points, because China doesn't play those games or Australia doesn't play, there's no world ranking points up for grabs because the game hasn't been played.
Oh no, what they can probably do is get FIH sanction on Australia D versus New Guinea B team and they'll pick up a few points there.
But I also look, you know, we talked briefly about the world rankings previously and I just find it's very unfair, I think, that you have the top teams in the world are able to pick up points playing in the Pro League. Well, all those that are not in the Pro League are falling further and further down the world rankings. So for them to ever now break into that top echelon is going to be really hard because to get the same points, say, if you use as an example, I think it was if Malaysia wanted to play Indonesia, they'd have to play something like 10 test matches in order to get the points that a team playing in the Pro League will get from one match.
Hey, just as while we're on ranking points, when was the last time the number one ranked team won the men's or women's gold medal at the Olympics?
Well, I think it was before there were world rankings.
So, you know.
Yeah.
What do they mean in the end anyway? Being number one certainly doesn't count for much in an Olympic.
Well, I also think that's exactly what's going to happen here, John, is because you've got all this points for every game now, people are just going to go, doesn't really matter.
Can't figure it out anyway.
Yeah, too hard basket.
And as certain teams start to gravitate towards each other in playing games against each other because it suits them for world ranking points, we'll see that fracture in the game, a global fracture in the game.
Yeah, I mean, what worries me again, the sort of flip side of that is you've got India, for example, have just gone up to 4 now in the world rankings. Now, if India find themselves, and I think India will be at the near the top of the Pro League when it happens because they're going out there to try and win every game. If they're ranked in the top 3 come the Olympics, the expectation in India will be that they will finish on the podium. It's already that they're going to finish on the podium. It will then get even higher, the expectation. You've seen what it's like in Australia. When you build a team up, you build a team up, the pressure you put on that team, and I just worry the damage that could possibly do to hockey in India if that team is ranked in the top 3 come July this year, and then they fail to medal, they bow out, say, at the quarterfinals, there will be absolute... I just cannot imagine the reaction in India.
Well, if they roll up to the Olympics and play like they did in Game 1 against Belgium, they won't be winning a game at the Olympic Games playing like that. Because the Belgians could have scored about 20 goals in that particular game. Anyway, shall we move on?
I think we should.
I'm Azuma Nelson, and you are listening to Not the Footy Show.
I haven't got enough teeth.
There you go. Well, it is time for our guest on this show, and as we mentioned at the top of the show, we're turning our attention to gridiron, and we had this young lady on the show about 3 years ago when I met her at the Kabaddi World Cup, but she's since been over in America helping coach with the Buffalo Bills and breaking down barriers for women's coaching in American football. So it's with great pleasure we welcome back to Not the Footy Show, Phoebe Schechter. Phoebe Schechter, welcome back to Not the Footy Show.
Thank you so much for having me on again. It's great to be back.
Well, I was looking. It's just been just over 3 years, I think, since we last spoke to you. But I thought with the Super Bowl, I was thinking about you and thought it would be a good time to catch up on what you've been up to. But it was a pretty good final, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was between the Chiefs and 49ers. And I think going into the game, people were pretty even in terms of who they thought might win it and more so who they thought had kind of deserved it or would deserve it. So it tore it a little bit for people, but the game started off with basically the 49ers taking the lead. And by the second half, the Kansas City Chiefs had just made another comeback, which they're pretty much known for at this point, and ended up stealing the game. So it was actually one of the more exciting Super Bowl games we've had in a while.
No, it certainly was. And I mean, I was watching it and I just wondered, I mean, I'm not an expert on the Super Bowl by any stretch of the imagination, but do you think you've seen one where there have been so many handling errors or sort of passing errors and those errors obviously being forced by good defense?
Yeah, and they were definitely forced by good defense. But I think that overall, you know, the missed tackles, ideally when you make a tackle in American football, and I imagine any sport, rugby, you want to make that tackle and at least have a person as a ball carrier fall within that 1 to 2 yard space. But when someone's getting an extra 5, 10 yards on every run, it makes it very frustrating. But, you know, I think for both of these quarterbacks as well, it was a whole new environment for them. Neither of them had really played in a Super Bowl, and it's a really big game, and it's a really kind of scary thing to be a part of in some ways, especially if it's your first time.
Oh, no, I'm sure it would have been in front of all that massive crowd, huge TV audience. It's one place you do not want to make a mistake.
Exactly.
Now, obviously, it was a big day as well for a young lady there in Katie Sowers, who is the assistant coach of the 49ers, the first female assistant coach in a Super Bowl final. I mean, that must have been great for the women's movement within American football.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the publicity that's come off of it that lets others know that there are females, you know, within coaching, within officiating, athletic trainers, it's been huge. You know, we have this saying we like to use called, if you can see her, you can be her. And for us, the Super Bowl is the biggest platform for that. And so for little boys and girls to be able to see Katie as a football coach, you know, at the Super Bowl, it's incredible, because now hopefully they will think that they can achieve that one day too. But overall, I mean, it's just been an outpouring of wonderful messages for her. And she's worked so hard to get to where she is now. In regards to her path there, she was with the Falcons with Kyle Shanahan, who's now the head coach of the 49ers. And when he got the new gig at the 49ers, he brought Katie with him. So that just shows the level of respect that he has for her.
No, it's funny you mention that, because I was thinking before we obviously hooked up for this interview that just like many female athletes and coaches who are breaking down barriers, it's kind of strange for us, or for me it feels, because I sort of feel I should be interviewing you as a coach, but not as a female coach. But then because you're a forerunner, you feel you have to mention that female side, as you said, to inspire the next generation.
Yeah, and I think that will one day change. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, right? People don't want to say, oh, you know, she's this or he's this. If you just want to be a great coach, or you just want to be a great teacher or a great interviewer, whatever it is that you do for work, you just want to be the best at it. We're all competitors. So hopefully one day we won't have to identify the gender of someone or the race of someone in order to justify why they're there or how good they are at something.
No, I mean, and obviously since we last spoke, you've been very fortunate that you went over to the Buffalo Bills, and it would be interesting to get an insight as to how you were received, you know, as one of the coaches there in what is perceived as being obviously a very male-dominant environment.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with the culture of your program. You know, what is the message that's being pushed down and across? And for me, the Buffalo Bills have a female owner, so that already sets the tone differently. And, you know, from the top down, so to our head coach, Sean McDermott, I mean, he was incredible. He's got a little daughter as well. You know, she started dressing up on Halloween as a coach. So, you know, that's a really exciting thing, because now she thinks she can do that. And, you know, whether it was the other coaches or the other players, they were absolutely fantastic with me in terms of how they received me as a as a coach within the building. You know, it might be different for these guys, and I think that's something that we have to be aware of, because probably their entire lives within their football world, it has been male. So now we're introducing more females into their lives, whether that's in high school, college, or at the NFL level. And it will soon become the norm. And again, going back to what we said earlier, these little kids will now see, actually, that is the norm. You know, we've seen this on TV. We see that there are female athletic trainers running on, giving the guys water, whatever that may be. So they're anticipating that. Whereas in the past, we've not had much coverage of that. So nobody even knows there are females working within the building like that.
I mean, one of the things I read that the coach did there was he showed all the players a video of you playing and making a tackle, which I believe impressed them immensely, and suddenly they realized they would take notice of what you had to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work on the defensive side of the ball, and I was with a group called the defensive backs. And so he took my kabaddi highlight reel and a few of my American football highlights and showed them to all the guys as a way to kind of earn respect and trust. And, you know, I think they saw my passion for the sport just in watching me play, and my passion for tackling, which is doesn't matter if you don't know what kabaddi is, you can still appreciate tackling. So, you know, after that, that definitely helped me going into the gym in the morning, and the guys would come in and they'd see me working out. They were impressed with that. So all of these little things add up all the time to build trust.
I'm sure they do. Now, I was reading again an interview that you did with somebody else where you actually said that you put a lot of pressure on yourself. Now, was that because of you thinking of yourself as a female coach in a male environment, or was it just that you were a coach that was trying to prove yourself?
So I'd say the biggest pressure was I knew that this is a new opportunity for, unfortunately, for females. So for me, I felt like I had to put pressure on myself, because if I took a wrong step or if I didn't do something, perhaps that meant in the future that other people wouldn't get these opportunities. And that was probably the most pressure that I had put on myself. But I think, again, you know, we're competitors. I wanted to be the best that I could be. And, you know, in order to essentially play catch up to these coaches and these players, I had to be putting in the extra work. You know, a lot of times they would say a word and I would have no idea what it meant, especially my first time with them. You know, it was like a whole new language, and I pretty much had to create my own glossary because I couldn't even ask a question because I didn't know what they were saying. So for me, I knew that I was going to have to work 10 times harder just to be able to stay afloat and then hopefully excel.
Yeah, it was interesting because one of your colleagues there said the thing that he felt made you a good coach was that you were curious. He said you were really curious about everything, which meant that you had an open mind and were willing to learn and take everything on board. Did you ever regard yourself as being curious?
So he was the coach I was with, so Rob Boris. So we spent pretty much all day together. So I would ask him every question, and he was brilliant because he was a fantastic teacher. So he's a tight ends coach. So I would constantly, if I saw something, well, what is this? Or why are we doing this? And, you know, I kind of had that conversation with him in the first place when I first got there with him. He'd never had an intern before in his 14 years in the league. So that was a learning curve for both of us, especially one that asks as many questions as I do. But it really grew our relationship as well. And I think you have to be curious. One of the things that I was very acutely aware of was that there are a lot of things I don't know. And I would say that to whether it's the coaches or the players, you know, I don't want to be false in front of them and pretend like I know something. It's more like, no, I don't know this, but I will find an answer for you and make it work that way.
No, I think that's a good sort of lesson in life is if you don't know, admit it, and then just make sure you find somebody who does who can explain it. But I was looking and thinking as well about various sports and whether, you know, they are welcome to coaches of either sex, and I think a lot of them are. But to me, American football, when you look at how technical it is and how tactical it is, you wonder whether it actually is irrelevant what sex the coach is, as long as they know their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think NFL are really leading the way in that front right now in terms of all they're doing for diversity and inclusion. But when it comes to American football, you know, you have to be a good teacher, and that doesn't matter what your sex is. But also, there are so many intricacies within the sport, and there's so many people that take part within a coaching staff. It doesn't matter what your gender is to say if you can look at something and then draw it up, for example, or if you're really good at analytics. You know, these are all people that play roles within a team. And again, the gender doesn't affect that whatsoever.
No, absolutely. Now obviously, there was a lot of publicity with Carly Lloyd, the U.S. soccer player, how she was training with the Philadelphia Eagles. There was talk she might get a game as a kicker. I mean, do you think we will see a female playing in the NFL at some point?
Perhaps at a specialist position like a kicker or a punter. You know, the biggest thing, and it's not to think of a negative, is that you will have to be able to tackle someone. You know, so at least when you're in those roles, hopefully 80% of the time, you're not having to make a tackle because something's gone wrong. But I mean, in terms of the leg strength, obviously we saw Carly Lloyd kick, and she absolutely has it. So she's got the potential to do that should she want to. And on a football roster, you do have positions for, we call them specialists. So, you know, it's very much so a possibility that that could be a perfect role for a female trying to make it in the NFL.
Now, we mentioned, obviously, you were over with the Buffalo Bills. I believe you're not going there at the moment. You've got your hands full in the UK. Can you maybe bring us up to speed as what's happening with American football in England?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a really exciting time for the sport within the UK and across Europe, really. So last August, we started the NFL Academy, which you could pretty much compare to basketball academies, but it's based right in London. And it's all about getting kids basically in high school age, so kind of 14 to 17, and putting them through American football as a school, and ideally getting them into colleges in the States, or perhaps, you know, making it into the NFL one day. So that started up. I've started a new project called the UK Dukes, where we're going around the country and Europe to deliver camps, clinics, upskill people, starting a flag football schools program. Also, because the Olympic Committee are looking to put flag football into the 2028 Olympics, as it will be held in Los Angeles. So it's giving people a lot more to work towards. And then the national governing body over here, we've just signed a deal with the Canadian Football League to host combines here, which is, again, another kind of exit strategy for people who are looking to either make it in the professional levels. So we've just had a combine the other weekend, and we've got a couple of our British guys going over to trial again. So, you know, there's definitely a lot going on at the moment. And I think the way that this sport is growing, the Jags have just announced they're having two of their home games in the UK, which could be potentially the next steps for building a franchise over here for a long term.
Wow, that's a huge move. And it sounds like you don't have a resting moment.
No, sir. I love it that way, though.
Well, you know, we've got a gridiron league here in Western Australia. Maybe if anyone's listening to this, they might want to invite you over to do some coaching here as well, so you can get some sun on you.
Yeah, absolutely. I need that. I can't have these 8 degrees and rain anymore. I need sunshine in my life.
Well, Phoebe, before we let you go, I did see that you were saying that you reckon in the next 20 years that there will be a female NFL coach. I suppose the first question is, if that opportunity came up, would you jump at it? Do you feel you would be ready for it? Maybe not now, but in 10 years?
Yeah, I think, you know, just being around people like Coach McDermott, who I've been around, he was under Andy Reid, so the head coach that just won the Super Bowl. You know, I think when you're around people like that and the leadership and the mentality, you know, at a head coach level, you're probably more of a people manager than essentially a coach. So I think that I would absolutely jump at the opportunity. I'm sure Katie or any, you know, we've got Coach Lowe, who's with Tampa Bay. So there's a few of us females at the moment that I think would love to build up to that. But the experience is so key, and just learning as much as possible about the ins and outs of the business, definitely.
And when that opportunity comes, as you said, hopefully in the next 20 years, do you think that we will be at a stage then where people will just say it's a coach, and it won't be sort of, oh, it's a woman, it's a marketing opportunity for the franchise, or, you know, it's tokenism, that they will have got there because they deserved it and everybody will know that?
I do think that everyone will know that, and that exactly as you just said, I'd imagine if you become the quote unquote first female head coach, they will still put that female title there, but actually everyone else will just be saying, you know, you've made it as a head coach. And I don't think that the average population will be saying that, which is exciting to think about. You know, that's a huge goal for us. So we will get there one day. I know we will.
Well, look, Phoebe, it's been fantastic catching up with you again. As I say, it's been almost 3 years passed under the bridge since we last spoke. And boy, oh boy, have you been busy. Congratulations on everything you've achieved. And rest assured, we're the other side of the world, but we are following your progress.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks again, and all the very best for 2020.
Thank you. You too.
The flavors of Africa await you at Mama Africa's in Nollamara. Under new management, Mama Africa's is open for breakfast, lunch and dinner. If you're feeling homesick and yearning those unique flavors and dishes of Africa, then Mama Africa's is the place for you. All our meals are homemade, freshly prepared and use unique African ingredients, ensuring a dining experience that has you coming back for more. Whether it's African company, a meal with friends, or a cup of chai tea with a mandazi or a samosa, or just to experience our mouth-watering signature dishes, visit us at 57 Nollamara Avenue, Nollamara. Mama Africa Restaurant, for fresh food that speaks to your soul.
Hi, I'm Mark Leduca, and you're listening to Not the Footy Show.
Long time ago, that one.
It is indeed, but still one of the greats.
He is.
Well, that was Phoebe Schechter, our special guest on our 499th show. And again, John, I just think it's amazing how the American system seems to be a lot more accepting than some other sports of the women coming in. And as long as they can do their job, they're just a coach. They're no longer male, female. It's whether you can do the job, and that's the way it should be.
Well, they got into the change rooms as reporters a lot earlier than they did in a lot of other countries, and that's almost like where it started from. Once they got over that initial hurdle of there being a woman in the dressing room full stop, I think it all opened up from there. And look, the Americans understand promotion. They understand how all of that works. They're very good at it, and they understand how much it's worth to them. There's more value in having a woman doing it than there is a bloke doing it, basically.
But we talked about that, and obviously, and I hope that changes over time. But I think the great thing the coach did there when she joined the Buffalo Bills was to show some video of her playing so that they knew, hey, this is one tough cookie. She may be female, but she goes in hard when she plays, and therefore give her a bit of respect. And I think that was a nice move on his part.
And I think gridiron, for as basic a game as it actually is, has been so intellectualized to such a point. These guys are going in there and I think they're a bit beyond that. They're a bit beyond the mates in the shed sort of gig. You know, they're having all sorts of information fed to them all the time, and they just accept it. They accept everybody's role with them, and they see a club as a very big enterprise. You know, there's 50 odd bloody players on the list. And then all the accoutrements that hang on to it. You know, every player on the list gets a ring. It's not just the player that walks out there on game day. So there's a far more inclusive ideal in Australia. You've got to play in that team or you don't get a medal.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think that is one of the great things is when you do have a proper team, it is everybody. It is, you know, the people that are contributing in the smallest way. But as long as they're contributing to the team as a whole, they are part of it. And if you get that inclusion right, you have great success.
And good luck to her. Certainly breaking down, and just breaking down barriers, not necessarily gender barriers, but how many English people have coached in the NFL at any level? How many Englishmen are there in there?
Well, yeah, there wouldn't be many.
How many Englishmen have played NFL?
Well, I know,
at that level, the American NFL level, I know they've got had competitions, you know, NFL, Europe and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
but there was a former Swindon Town footballer called John Smith.
Oh, really?
And I remember when he was not a brilliant footballer for us, but he was actually earning more than the then captain of England, Brian Robson, when he was playing. I think he played for the New England Patriots as a kicker.
As a kicker.
But he played for them.
No, he did. A kicker is an integral part of a gridiron team. It's all about team, isn't it, mate?
It is indeed.
Oh, good luck to her and good luck with the...
Yeah, and if any of the clubs, as you heard us joke, she wants to get out of the winter in England and coach here in Australia. So if anyone is interested, contact me and Not the Footy Show and I can put you in touch with Phoebe because she'd love to come out and get involved in the coaching here.
Now, two of our favourite things to talk about on this podcast, Ashley, are governance and ASADA. I like talking about ASADA. There's changes coming, and they're interesting changes. And I'm not sure that actually they're the sort of changes we want to see coming. According to the ABC, Australia's anti-doping body, ASADA, is to be redefined as an, inverted commas, enforcement body, with athletes stripped of their common law right to silence. If past changes to the act governing ASADA would see it renamed Sports Integrity Australia, and hand significantly more power to the CEO of the body. Now, this is all part of the Australian Sports Anti-Doping Authority Sports Integrity Australia Bill 2019, which will combine all nationally focused sports integrity functions into a single entity, wresting control from individual sporting codes, which have developed their own sophisticated and costly integrity units. So that means it'll no longer be the NRL integrity unit investigating if Billy Bloggs gets on this and does something a bit stupid. It'll be Sports Integrity Australia.
Which is an acronym, is SIA. Is that any relation to the CIA? Because we know what they're like.
Well, the legislation is currently making its way through the Senate with the Joint Committee on Human Rights.
So we've got a bunch of numpties making a decision on something like this. Who, let's be honest, the Senate, what do they know about sports governance?
Well,
they know nothing.
The powers include lowering of the threshold required to issue a show cause notice requiring a person to attend an interview. Now, currently the threshold requires ASADA's CEO to reasonably believe a person of interest has questions to answer. That threshold will now be reasonably suspect. Okay, so you don't have to believe it, you just have to think it. A three-person... This is the one that gets me. A three-person panel that approves all show cause notices would be abolished, leaving the CEO with sole discretionary power.
Very dangerous and...
Not happy about that.
Absolutely not.
And athletes would also have their right to not to self-incriminate eroded under the legislation. So that basically means if you're sitting in an interview and they say, well, do you have breakfast this morning? And you go, well, I'm not telling you. Well, you have to now. You cannot refuse to answer.
I plead concussion.
Yeah. Now, according to, let me get this.
But John, seriously, you cannot leave something as important as this and a player's career being on the line. And let's not forget their livelihood being on the line in the hands of one person, the CEO. Because if that CEO has a vendetta, or there might be, and I mean, if you read the book about Leeds United when Peter Ridsdale was involved, there was a player that was on their books and they foolishly minuted that they wanted someone to break his leg at training to get him off the payroll so the insurance could pay. Now, if you look at this, you could have a sport go, we're in trouble with this guy, he's costing us too much money and we're in a bit of financial trouble, can you rub him out? I'm not saying, but that possibility is there. And this is what I'm saying again when we're going with the Pro League. You've got to look at the worst case scenario every time before you go down these paths and before you rubber stamp something, because that could happen.
Well, according to Tasmanian Greens Senator Nick McKim, the High Court has found that the right not to self-incriminate is a human right which protects personal freedom, privacy and dignity, and those are really important rights in our country. I would think that they should be important rights across the globe, although that's not the case, but it is certainly in this country. We need to be very careful when we move to erode those rights just for a particular group of people. And in this case, that group of people is professional sports people signed up under the ASADA WADA code. So that's not just big stars of international sport. That's people playing at a reasonable level of sport within the country. Soccer players,
football players, tennis players,
anybody that's playing, and, you know, and not necessarily at the top levels.
Well, most of it, let's be honest, most of it's the level just below the top level. It's usually the people that are trying to cheat the system are the ones that are trying to get to the top level and are just below that threshold. They're, certainly in tennis, that's where they've found all the corruption with the betting is and the tanking games. That is the level that it's happening.
Now, the proposed legislation is in response to Australia's sports integrity arrangements, the Wood Review, which reforms... with reforms recommended to enhance the nation's ability to address integrity threats such as doping, match-fixing, corruption, organised crime, and bullying and abuse. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The focus of the bill is heavily skewed towards those who play sport rather than those who govern it. And as Senator McKim has been quoted as saying, this is biased strongly against athletes and toward eroding the rights of athletes. It is not focused anywhere near strongly enough on ensuring that we have integrity at the highest levels of sports management. Now, in the last few weeks, last month, we've seen an amazing sports rort case come out in this country. We've seen another sports rort come out too, where the government was giving money out for women's change rooms and they were being spent on swimming pools, to the point where some of the applicants didn't even know they had been given grants because they didn't apply for them. They were just doled out the money. It's pork barreling at its finest, actually. Political pork barreling. And that, of course, leaves aside the obvious irony of the government's case at the moment being caught up in the sports rort. We must admit, put it out there, that's only one side of the sports rort money divide. The other side of it is what happens once that money gets into sports. Because some sports are very good at dolling up the money and getting it to the places that's needed. Other sports are not so good at it, and basically it goes missing.
Yeah, or it goes into salaries. A lot of it is going to the top bigwig salaries rather than to where it's meant to, which is grassroots.
I have a real problem if you see an amateur sport with a CEO who's making 100 grand a year. I have a real problem with that.
Oh, I can tell you a few over here where they're earning more than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, to me, wrong. Now, I'm going to pick up another thing there where you were saying about the integrity needs to cover such things as the doping, match-fixing, corruption, organised crime, and the bullying and the abuse. Now, surely, again, that comes not to the integrity unit. It's an education process. Like, if the clubs are doing their job, if the actual governing body is doing their job, you would be educating those people on that, or needs to maybe go into the schools where we start the education program. Now, I'm going to just go off slightly on a tangent here, because I was talking to someone from one sport and they were saying that they've got coming up now, they've been given some Indigenous shirts and they're going to have a match that is an Indigenous fixture. And I said, well, what have you done in relation to that Indigenous? You know, have you spent time with Aboriginal people? Have you learned anything about their culture? Oh. I said, well, look, I have a real problem with that. If you're calling it that, and are your governing body literally just ticking a box saying, we'll get you to wear a shirt, we've then done our bit for Indigenous affairs or whatever, and then we get the money comes from the government. That is wrong. And this, to me, is the same thing. It comes down to education. If these things, we shouldn't be needing to have Indigenous rounds, because the education process should be at a stage where everybody understands it, knows the history, and respects their culture. And it's the same thing when it comes to betting, drug cheating, all of that. You should know when you go into a sport that you cannot do that. These are the barriers and why you can't do it. And we should also be putting up the examples of people who've done it and screwed up.
Well, we should try and find out more about Sports Integrity Australia, because The changes will also require the Australian Sports Commission Act to be changed to guard against the overlap of functions and responsibilities. Oh, no, that's un-Australian. It's certainly un-Australian when it comes to sports administration to not have an overlap.
Well, again, John, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head, because I was talking to somebody just again the other day who's involved in our national teams, and they were saying to me how the AIS, when it was set up in Canberra, we had some of the best sports scientists, the best sports psychologists, and they were based in Canberra. So all of the sports that were part of the Australian Institute of Sport would then go or get the person from Canberra, if they were, say, based in Brisbane, because Squash Australia is based in Brisbane, they would go up there and they might have needed a player that needed to see a sports psychologist. So the person from Canberra would go there, spend time with them. Then that athlete may, in fact, go to Canberra so that they would get the benefit of this pool of talent that we had in Canberra. Somebody somewhere along the line has said, no, 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 we want our own sports psychologists, our own dietitians, our own sports physiologists, our own strength and conditioning coach. So suddenly, all of that expertise kind of left Canberra and was allocated to each sport. So now the problem is exactly what you're saying here. We're doubling up on all of these things when money could be spent in other areas. And so the system that was actually working really well, and let's be honest, if you look at all of the sports that we have international competitors in, you can't tell me that all of them are getting the best sports psychologist, the best dietitian, or the best strength and conditioning, the best physiologist, because certainly there's a pecking order. And if you're down the order as a sport, you may miss out on getting the best expertise because suddenly they're actually already tied up in another sport. Whereas the old system worked far better, in my opinion.
Yeah, how many juniors do you think are attracted to a sport by adding a dietitian to the...
Zero.
There's a lot of that goes on. I'm not saying that there's not a need for athletes to be watching their diets and have, you know, some sort of idea about what's going on there, but I wouldn't have thought that was even a part-time role.
But I'll give you an example, John, as well. I've been sort of roped in to help do a bit of coaching lately, and I couldn't believe this young player. He is 17, and he was always turning out to training late, and I said, oh, why? He goes, because I'm having physio. I said, oh, have you got an injury then? No, he goes, I'm going there to strengthen, for strength. I'm going, sorry, you're going to have physio. I said, why don't you see a strength and conditioning coach or get somebody who can check your physiology to give you the exercises? I don't think a physio, but this physio is obviously taking the money off this young boy, and he's going to these things. And I'm thinking, I cannot see a physio. Yeah, it may sort of help your muscles or loosen them up, but I can't see how they're actually going to help you gain strength long term.
Maybe it's just someone who's got a physiotherapy degree and they're branching out a little bit.
Yeah, but
and they're using the physiotherapy degree as the part that says, look, I've got a bloody degree, mate. I know what I'm talking about.
But I remember Dave Mitchell, when he was coach of the Perth Glory, he was saying, you know, they had to have the physio pitch side at training. And he goes, so it was in case anybody got injured. And he goes, I hate that. Because he said, what happens then is one of the players is not training particularly well, or he's in a bit of a bad run of form, and suddenly goes, oh, my hamstring's a bit tight, I'm just going to go and talk to the physio. And he goes, whereas if the physio's not there, people just get on with it. And he goes, and they can see the physio after training. But he goes, the worst thing is when you're in a bit of a slump, everybody's suddenly going, oh, I've got a niggle, I'm going to have to pull up here. And he goes, and it just creates this spiral, but it's purely because that guy's standing there, they go, oh, I'll go and see him now. And athletes are a funny beast. They all do it. I mean, I used to know a guy who ran the 400 meters. If he didn't get the inside four lanes, he was injured because he didn't like not being able to overtake everybody.
Oh, dear. Oh, I got one more thing just to mention before we go.
I got one after you, so,
yep. I'm going to have a little rant here. I haven't done a real rant for ages.
Mine's a bit of a rant, too.
Get rid of quarters from hockey, please. You know what, mate? Tuesdays and Thursdays are for coaches. Saturdays are for players. I'm really starting to get irritated by the intrusion of coaches into playing, into the game. We need coaches, don't get me wrong. Coaches are great. They do lots of really good things, and they're really wonderful to have in your team, and they help out lots and lots and lots. But for that, well, it's only 60 minutes now. It's not even 70 minutes anymore. For that 60 minutes, we don't need you. Stand there with your clipboard, speak to them as they come on and off the field. You don't need to go out there every 15 minutes checking on the little petals to make sure that they're all right. It's athletes, they've got to stand up and be held accountable. And I'm just so, that's why I made that comment about why it was so good to see that Mahomes take on the game the way he did. Because I'm really getting sick of the intrusion of coaches into game day. It's not your day, it's for the players. I want to see players play.
And I think they're paralysing some young players because the players are too scared to actually do what comes naturally to them. Now, the one thing I want to just finish on is a bit of a rant for me. Obviously, fantastic that they had the game of cricket at the WACA the other day, the boundaries for bushfires.
Yep.
They raised $40,000. Fantastic Great. Effort. Really good. But I've just got to ask this question.
You're going to bag Gossage?
No, I'm going to bag... Why is a politician playing in that game? I'm sorry. Now, our premier played in that game. It was meant to be celebrities. You are not a celebrity if you're a politician. And now, to me, if you want my respect, you go with a wooden box around the crowd, collecting money from everybody that's there, and talk to them, and let them tell you what they really think of your policies and what the hell you're bloody doing. Don't stand in the middle trying to be a hero, trying to get everybody on side. That's not your job. I do not want to see politicians playing in sporting games trying to win popularity votes against celebrities. To me, they should be in there mixing with the people.
Ah, oh, brilliant. Some people are on the pitch, they think it's all over. It is.
See ya. We'll be back next week.